So I was thinking about the topic about the night shia, about the nemunas of the night echad when it comes to checking shatnez. It was a fascinating shaila. Really, somebody asked me a couple of weeks ago the following. If they went to get a certain jacket checked for shatnez, and the shatnez checker told them that, in fact, there was shatnez in it. Not so common today, but whatever. They found there actually was shatnez in the jacket. They had the shatnez removed. And then apparently they had bought the exact same jacket as their father had bought as well. And the father had gone independently to go get his, the same jacket check for shatnez with a different shatnez checker, and that other shatnez checker reported back that there was no shatnez in the jacket. So there's a little bit of a confusion. So there seemed to be a little bit of a contradiction between the two Adim. So they called up the company and they asked, is it possible that one would have something in it, one would not? The company said it would be really, really one in a million chance that such a thing would happen. Highly unlikely, which really leads us to believe that one of the shatnez checkers was making a mistake. Again, we're not accusing anybody of intentionally making a mistake, but clearly one of them had the wrong information. Now the question is, what do you do from here? So the person who already had the shatnez removed, so the shatnez was already removed and finished. So the case is done, done deal already. And the shatnez, whatever supposed the shatnez was already removed. So that was the end of the story. The question is whether the other person would be permitted to wear the jacket that he has. And then to make matters even worse, that the son who had the shatnez removed told me that he sometimes borrows jackets from his father. And now he wanted to know that according to his understanding, according to shatnez checker he had checked with, that told him that there was shatnez in the jacket, the father may not be particularly interested in getting this quote-unquote non-shatnez removed. And now the question is really twofold. So number one, if I know for a fact that one person has said one thing, someone else has said something else, where does that place me? And number two, where does it place me? Even more serious, if I'm the one who asked the person who told me that it was actually quote-unquote trade, that actually had shatnez in it. So that started me thinking about all these issues related to in that month of the Neid Echad, as it relates to checking Shatnez, the Isur, etc. So we try to learn a little bit of the Sugya and try to come up with some kind of conclusion how we should play out in the halacha.
There's something that you're leaving out, that when garments are made in foreign countries, they're not necessarily made in factories that you think of. So if one has it, all have it, or none have, or one doesn't have it, none have it. They give it out privately to people to work on in their homes. And you could very well get one jacket that has it and one jacket that doesn't, depending where it was made.
Right, so that's what we try to write. So that's what we try to ascertain. Right, so that's what we try to ascertain from the company. And again, I wasn't privy to all the details. I wasn't, okay, I don't know, maybe that's the answer. Maybe the answer, okay, we have to end the share. But maybe that's the answer. We're going to work now with the assumption that it was the identical jacket. And there seems to be a little bit of a discrepancy in terms of what the reports are. But if you're right, maybe you're not. I don't know what the ultimate facts are. I don't know. I can't tell you. That I can't tell you. Okay. So let's use this as an opportunity to try to discuss some of the issues related to Manos of an Eid Echad. But before we even get to the issue of just how much we trust the person, especially when it's contradicted by somebody else, why are we checking the first place? Is there any real need, la halacha, to check for these kinds of things? So we begin with the first sugya, which those who learned that is Chulin, the third path of Chulin, who lost someone between the intricacies of Hilchos Treifos. Hopefully, we'll appreciate this perhaps even more. We start with the first of the Marvikomos, it's a Rashi and the second Chulin. The Rashi and Chulin that the Beis and Aleph tells us that there is a principle that we follow Rove, we follow the majority. Alavadai halacha l'moshe b'sinayim yisamchin in aruba, that there must be some tradition that we have going all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu, that we rely on Rove when there's a majority that something is permissible, so we're permitted to rely on that majority. A few lechad yafshar, even though it's theoretical, it's possible to be mevarer, it's possible to find out the facts on the ground, we are not obligated to do so, because we have the principle of a Rove. So Rashi first is telling us that the source for this idea is a tradition, it's an old tradition, it doesn't have any roots in the Chumash proper. Or Inami Rashi says, maybe it does appear even in the Tarshi Bechtav, perhaps based on the pasuk that appears in Parshas Mishpatim, when you have a din Torah and two judges say one way, and the other judge says the other way, you follow the majority. So Rashi says that maybe that's the source of the principle of following Rove. So we're not exactly sure. We know that we live our lives based on the principle of Rove. We follow majority. But we don't know whether the source of following majority is just pure tradition, ish for pi'ish ad Moshe Rabbeinu, just an oral tradition. Or maybe, no, maybe it actually has its root in the Torah Shavuot Ksav itself. The reason why Rashi is a little bit hesitant to apply this pasuk about Haram Lahatos, the case of Rove, is because the Gemara in Maseches Chulin, in the first paragraph, differentiates between two different kinds of Rove. So we call it Ruba de Isa Kamon, in contrast to Ruba de Leisa Kamon. Ruba de Isa Kamon means, literally, the Rove is in front of us. We can actually count it up. We can make a tally of 10 stores, or 9 stores that sell kosher meat. One store sells non-kosher meat. We find a piece of meat on the floor, so we're allowed to follow the Rove. That's called the Ruba de Isa Kamon, because again, we can count. 1, 2, 3, or 5, we count 9, count 1. It's an obvious Rove. The Ruba de Leisa Kamon is a little bit less clear than that. Ruba de Leisa Kamon means we make some kind of a statement, some kind of a statistical analysis on something, even though nobody ever really counts, but it's actually impossible to count. Let's say, for example, as we're learning the third of Chulin, so there are a lot of things that can go wrong with an animal that can make it into a trefa. You can have a hole in the heart, a hole in the lungs, a hole in the stomach, etc. There are many, many things that can go wrong. But the reality is that most animals don't have problems. Most animals are not walking around with holes in their heads, holes in the heart, holes in the stomach, etc. So Rove behemoths are ain't on trefos. But there are some animals that are trefos. So that's not a root of the Isekabon. Nobody actually sat down and counted all the animals in the world. Just that we assess, we see that animals are not just falling and dropping dead, they're right and left. So it must be that most animals are, in fact, healthy animals. That's what's called the Ruba de Leisa Kamon. So a Ruba de Leisa Kamon may not have its roots in Acharei Mahatos, because Acharei Mahatos is talking about three judges, and you can actually point to count the judges. So Rashi's not sure. Rashi's not, he's not sure what is the source for this idea that we follow both of these kinds of roads. Is it based on Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai, or is it are both robes based on Acharei Mahatos? Rashi continues, because maybe Acharei Mahatos Mashma Bei Ruba De Isa Kamon Bei Ruba De Leisa Kamon De Maishno Hai Mehai. Maybe both robes are similar enough to one another that they can both be derived from the same pasuk. So again, Rashi is not sure, but everybody knows that we do follow robes. And now Rashi says L'Maisa. What does that mean for us? It is based on this principle of following the majority. We do not check kol yuches trefos. We do not check for all the 18 different main categories of trefos, the holes in here, the holes in there, and the broken in there. None of that. Nobody checks animals today and opens up the animals and starts checking the hearts, and somebody checks the brains, and somebody checks the intestines. Nobody does that anymore. Nobody ever did that. Why? Because we have a row, because there's an overwhelming majority that there is no problem in the first place. However, Rashi says, "Unukubas hareya." There is one type of a trefa that we do check for until today as well, and that is holes in the lungs, other kinds of things that indicate that there are problems in the lungs, what are called tzirchos in the lungs, different lesions, different problems in the lungs that indicate that there may be holes there. Why all of a sudden do we check the lungs? We don't check the head, we don't check the stomach, we don't check the intestines, we don't check the heart. Why do we check the lungs? Mishum d'shchiach b'reyusa batkinan. Because it is more common to have a problem. This means to have a problem. It is more likely to have a problem. Now, again, it's not a majority of a problem. Most animals don't have problems in the lungs either. But this is what the Rishonim coined the phrase. It's called the miyud hamotzui. If you have a miyud hamotzui, we have a significant minority, a significant percentage, even though it's not a majority. The Mishkenos Yaakov, one of the Talmidim of Rechaim Volozhin, so he writes in the Shuvas, and that's the number that we usually accept today, 10%. You guys have a 1 in 10 chance that there is a problem. That's called the Mir HaMotsui, and you have to check for that. If it's less than a 1 in 10 chance, then you don't even have to check for that altogether. The Heji de Isrami, and what would happen, says Rashi, the Ifrisha Revelo Bada. What if the lung was never checked? You checked it in animal, you put the lung aside to check it, and then it got thrown into the garbage. Nobody ever checked the lungs. Rashi says, Miss Achwa, you're allowed to eat the animal. You don't have to check the lungs. If the dieved, you couldn't check it, your lungs disappeared, you're allowed to eat it. There's some chidinaha that we rely on the roads. So the halacha of checking for mir hamotzi is only a lechet chilo. There's another gemara that all seems to point in this direction. Rashi has three fascinating words. Rashi says, don't tell anybody this. Rashi says, don't publicize this. People are going to think that you're crazy eating treifas. But the din is that l'chatchili, you have to check the lungs. Because the evidence, if you didn't check the lungs, the meat is still kosher. What about checking the other treifas? Not even l'chatchili. There's no need. There's no hiddur. Nobody does. We don't do that either. Adayim is that. We check the animals. We check the lungs. Nobody checks the hearts and the brains and the intestines, etc. Because we have such a road that it's not even a minimum. So the post can point out that this is also true in other areas of halacha. Say our example, case of shatnez. Are we even obligated to check for shatnez in the first place? So the answer to the question is, well, what are the numbers? What are the statistics? Well, if the statistics are that there's well over 90% of these kinds of clothes out there that do not have shatnez altogether. If that is the case, then there's no need to check for it altogether. The same way we don't check the hearts of animals, we're not obligated to check the suit either. However, if you have a mina motzoi, if there's more than a 1 in 10 chance that there is a problem with shatnez, so that would be a problem. Now, it's kind of hard to make that assessment because it probably depends on the kind of suits. Let's say there are, most suits probably don't have a shatnez in them, but 90% of the suits are very, very inexpensive suits. But I have a very, very expensive suit. So if I have a very expensive suit, so then I have to figure out, well, what's the robe, what's the mina motzoi? These kinds of suits, it's not even so easy to tell that. It was very insignificant amounts of times. No, it's true. It's a rule that governs all of halacha, that if there's a robe and there's no miram botsui, then one doesn't have to be worried about it. Right. We apply this in checking for insects, for vegetables also. It's the same basic principle. If you have a type of a vegetable that if there's a miram botsui, there are bugs in that kind of a vegetable, then you have to be checked. If it's not a miram botsui, then you don't have to check. That's what a lot of the hashkocha and vegetables do. Because we try to reach the point where we clean it to the point where it's an overwhelming, such a high percentage that there's no problem anymore. So it reaches, it's past the point of being a mutant.
Well, my impression that the base is the base of the end result being a
Right. So I think when he uses the word reisa here, he almost means, you're right, that reisa almost gives off the image that it's not an absolute problem. It just means that there's a suspicion of a problem. But I think that Rashi here is using the term reisa in terms of problematic, things that are going to be kashrus problems. So I'm not sure he's using it in the absolute pure sense of a reisa, meaning that it's not really yet a problem. Right. I think Rashi here is talking almost in more general terms as to race in the sense of it's a problem. It's going to be a halachic problem. So if there's less than a 10% chance of a halachic problem, then we're not worried. Whereas the Ray has more than a 10% chance of a halachic problem. You're right. I agree. The terminology is not 100% accurate. Right. I agree. So again, so we're working with the assumption that it's maybe very hard to know whether we have a mir hamotzi or not, so we're going to insist on checking things for shanis. That's what our practice is today, because we buy the suit. We tell them we should get a check for shanis. Who's he going to go to get a check for shanis? The Torah says, the Pishnai made him Yochum David. You have to go to 280, you have to go to 2 witnesses. So the answer is no. You don't have to go for 2 witnesses. All you have to do is get 1 witness, because this falls into the category called a echad netman bisurim. The Torah tells us in a few places that unlike monetary cases or capital cases or other types of issues, marriage, divorce-related issues, which require 2 witnesses, issues that relate only to issa v'hefta, whether food is kosher or not, in this case, whether the garment is shatnez or not, one can trust even 1 witness in this matter. That's the chiddush. I would have thought, that if you have to find out, I have a suffix, so the only way to verify my suffix is I have to get Adam to testify. So that's not so much when I go to Rav to a Shaila, it's not so much that I'm trusting the Rav. I'm presenting I know all the facts, and I'm presenting to the Rav, maybe what the Torah is, what the halachic viewpoint is. Whereas here, I'm going to find the facts. I have no idea if the Shatnez is inside this cow or not. So I'm going to get somebody's to present to me what the facts are. The same way when I ask somebody, was this animal shechted or not? I ask the person, are there any bugs in this lettuce or something? So I'm going to somebody to provide the facts for me, and then I have to come on to Hilchos Eidos. So I would have thought that there's a din about Pishnayim Eidim, if there are two Eidim. So that's what Rashi is quick to point out, the second of the Mamre Kavos, the second Kittin. In the Shani Erech Mem Bisurin, it's most explicitly in Kittin that you do not have to go to two Eidim. One Eid is believed. Rashi explains, how do we know that? How do Chazal know that? Sherei Hamina Torah Kalechel B'Yechel Yisrael, Allah Frashas Truma, V'Allah Shchita, V'Allah Nikra Gid V'Yechel. Rashi gives four examples where it is obvious, as Rashi, that the Torah trusts everybody. The Torah never said that I can only eat in my own house. The Torah never said I can't trust somebody else. So Frashas Truma. The farmer tells me that he was not for Truma, so I believe him. The person tells me that he shechted, so I believe him. The person tells me that he removed the Gid Anoshe, I believe him. The person says there's no mechelet in this animal, so I believe him. Unless you're going to insist that everybody can only eat their own food, everyone has to be a shechet and a farmer, and a person who cleans up to get a nut, everyone has to do everything for themselves. The Torah clearly didn't set up such a system. It's built into the normal system of living that people are relying on one another. How could you rely on one another? It must be that Erech Mem Bisurim.
As opposed to just starting with the factors, and either it is or
it's not kosher. Right, because the reason why I think everyone's having trouble with this is that we've been so convinced by Chazal for the last 3,000 years that that's true. Because our mindset is correctly so that we don't really need Eidim, we don't have to go to court, we need two witnesses to testify, we just have to find out the facts. And everybody knows that Echon Embi Surah. That's exactly what we're trying to figure out. How does Chazal know that? Where did that come from? So the Chumash never speaks about it explicitly. The Torah speaks about it. If you don't know what to do, you're fine to witness. The witnesses tell you what to do. But here, the halacha says Erechem is good enough. So Rashi is searching. How does Chazal know that's true? Rashi says there is no pasuk that tells us Erechem and Bisurin. It's just the normal system that obviously the Torah accepts that people are eating in each other's houses. So that's predicated on Erechem and Bisurin. So according to Rashi, there's no absolute pasuk that says Erechem and Bisurin. It's just an assumption of the entire system. So unlike Rashi, Tosfos has a different assumption. Tosfos says in the third of the Mamre Kavos, Erechen and Bisurin, V'im Tomo, Menolim Erechen and Bisurin. Tosfos poses the question, where does it come from? Menonimili. So the Yishloma, Tosfos actually comes up with the drosha. The Yafida Minida, the Dashidu Rebekah, the Suffer Laliyatma. The Torah says that when a woman counts 7 days, it's called Shiva Nikiyim. So then it says the suffer law, she counts for herself. What does that mean, the suffer of the asthma? Nobody's checking that she's telling you the truth. How do you know? So the woman comes and she says she counted 7 days. She went to the mikveh. How does the husband supposed to believe her? So the Torah never insisted on Eidim. The Torah says the suffer law, but she counts for herself. So Tosfos says that must be the source that when it comes to Isurim, you're allowed to believe a person. You don't have to go look for a second witness. So Tosfos says Chazal must have extrapolated. Just as a woman is believed to say that she finished counting her Shivan Akiyim, so too the farmer is believed to say the food is, tumors and ice have been taken off. And the Shaykh is believed to say that the meat was shechted properly. And for our purposes, the Shatnez Shaykh is believed to say that he removed the Shatnez, or there's no Shatnez in the altogether. All derived from the Sofra Loli Atzim. So unlike Tosfos, other Rishonim say this is not true. The Ramban argues that this is not a valid source at Echon Bisurin. Because there's a very, very big distinction between the two. Argues the Ramban that here it's impossible otherwise. Imagine if the Torah would have given us a system that you have to have two Eidim to tell me that if the woman finished Shiva Nikiyim. It's ridiculous. Obviously, that's impossible. So the fact that the Torah accepts such a concept of trusting the woman, that doesn't lead us to believe that you can accept that in other areas of Halacha. Maybe when it comes to Shechita or Nachanami, you do need two Eidim. Maybe when it comes to Shanas, you have to have two Eidim to testify it's not Shanas. You have to have two people tell you there are no bugs in the vegetable. How do you know? Just because your wife is believed in Shiva Nikiyim, that doesn't necessarily translate to mean that any person is believed as an Eid Echad. So other Rishonim disagree with us. But Tosfos fixes their position. Tosfos told that the source for Eid Echad and Bisurim is derived from Bita. So then Tosfos turns the din on its head. In Tobar, in Kerafilu is Chazik Yisurim. The Mar says in the second Gitt, in the second Yavamas, that it's quite possible that an Eid Echad is not believed if there's a chazoka working against them. If the status quo was that it was also until now, and now the Erechon is coming to tell you that things have changed, it's not so simple that the Erechon is actually believed. In a case where I have no idea what happened, I don't know whether this will be discussion or not, I don't know whether the Shatnez, I have no idea what's going on, So then the Gemara says, but if I know for a fact from the last week that this has been also, now a person tells me something's changed, not so simple. It also says if the source is from Yuda, so then the Nida is telling you that her status has changed. We know she was a Nida, and now she's telling you she's no longer. So it also says, the Yeshlama, the Ein of a Cheska, Shtei Ruach Osha, the Shabu Shiva Tahorim, the Ne'ilah, the Chazak, Yisur, Begam, the other Mishra. So it's right that when a Nida tells you, a woman tells you that she's not a Nida anymore, that's not called going up against the status quo, because that status quo was never really there for very long altogether. Because this is what many folks can record in the phrase, Chazak Asir Lishtane. It's a status quo that changes all the time. A woman, for 2 weeks, she isn't either, 2 weeks, she's not, back and forth, back and forth. So since it's something that's so easily changed, and it's something that she can just simply go to the mikvah and change, it's something which is not considered to be a chazokah, going up against the status quo, and therefore the erechon would in fact be believed. So when all the dust settles, everybody agrees, the woman is believed to say she went to the mikvah. And the sheikh is believed to say she acted down. And the farmer is believed to say he took off from the devices. The guy in the bashkir in the back of the restaurant is telling you that he cleaned the vegetables for no more bugs. And the shahadah chef is telling you that he checked the shahadah, there's no shahadah, he removed the shahadah. So when all the dust settles, everybody agrees that Eidach is believed to be saved. Now the question becomes, what do you do when you have a contradiction between two Eidach? One day he tells you the meat is kosher, the other guy says it's not kosher. One guy tells you there are bugs in the vegetables, the other guy tells you there's no bugs. One person tells you there is shahadah, and the other fellow tells you there's no shahadah. So what do I do? The Gemara says that the principle called Erecha Be'achosha Lafklum. When you have a contradiction between two Eidim, so you throw them both out. So we don't know what to do. So we just tell me. And so it depends. If a person is a Shavatar Mitzvah and he's observant of this area of Halacha, so we assume that he's going to tell you the truth. The person is not observant that he has any gibbet of it, that's a big problem, and the person wouldn't have any money. Let's say you have a restaurant, and the guy is telling you that he's an owner, but he's not from. You tell you, yeah, all the meat's kosher. He's going to give it up because it's cheaper for him to buy tray for meat, and that's not going to be acceptable. The guy doesn't care about kashrus, he's going to tell you that he checked the vegetables. That's not going to help. Or if you have a person who doesn't care about shatnez, he's himself wears shatnez. He wants to make a quick buck by telling you that there's no shatnez in it, so he clearly will not be believed. But here you have two people that both from the Loshim with their mitzvahs, and they're contradicting each other. So what do you do? So you throw them both out. So now you throw them both out, and back to square one. So then the halacha is that you have to check the shahadah, unless it's not even a mirah matzu. So al-atzad, if it's true that there really is a mirah matzu here, if there's more than a 10% chance that there is shahadah in any given garment. So if that's true, so then you have to get a check, and the erechad who you went to was just contradicted by another erechad. So now you're up the creek. So both erechads, they cancel each other out. So how does that principle play out in terms of our original case, our original scenario? So the person number one, who got the shatnez removed already, so the shatnez removed, he doesn't have any more shatnez there. Person number two, so he went to a shatnez check, and the shatnez check is a reliable fellow, he's a firm fellow, and he's an Eidach, and he told you that there's no shatnez in here. The fact that there's another guy in the world, another shatnez check, who told you, forget, told you the opposite, what does that have to do with me? I never asked another person. I'm not looking to go running around asking a million people. I want to know, was this meat shechted? I go and I ask one person from the Mashkiach in the school, tells me, this is kosher meat. So the Erech is a Mashkiach, is a firm fellow. He's an Erech, he's going to be soon finished. I'm looking to go ask another Mashkiach. Go check 15 other schools at the time. No, I ask one person. I do what the Torah says. The Torah says, I'm going to be soon finished. I never ask the other guy. The other guy doesn't exist as far as I'm concerned. So the second fellow is not really obligated to. If he would have asked the other guy and he would have now had a latest of suffering, now he has a contradiction, now he's up to kook. But he didn't ask the other guy. He's not to ask the other guy. The person who he asked is an Erecha. The Erecha told him that the facts aren't finished. So I would think that the first fellow who asked the Shiloh to the guy who told him it's strength, he has a problem. The second guy, who the first told him it was kosher, so he's okay. So now the question is, the first guy wants to go wear the suit also. The first guy wants to borrow. So that's the
question. Right.
So I'm not sure that that's the second A. The reason I'm clicking to be showing them within the Sugya of Erech and Abisurin If I ask an erecha and the erecha tells me something is kosher, so now we say kolmokam shemitah Torah erecha and erecha shnayim. But that erecha now is treated like two people, and now it's either there are two people telling me that it's mutter. Now another guy is telling me that it's osur. That other guy is only an erecha. So that one erecha doesn't have koch against the quote unquote supposed two people. So according to many rishonim, once I ask the person, I trust him entirely. He takes on the task for two edim, and I'm not mechuyif to even if I would subsequently ask the other fellow, even if the other fellow would come and be made for me. I'm not even sure that this is called the other fellow being made for me. I'm not even sure that I'm shiachis to the other person. But there are other people floating around the world who have different opinions about something. I'm not sure that even affects me. If the person came and he told me, I asked him, I had some relationship with him, so then he could argue with an enechim against an enechim. So I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm not sure. But I want to go back to the first fellow. The first fellow now wants to say, I want to borrow my father's jacket. So the first guy to borrow his father's jacket, that's out of the question. So how in the world did he borrow his father's jacket? He for sure is a steer in Erecha. He went to Erecha, and Erecha told him that it's straight. And now another Erecha told him that it's kosher. So for him, it's Erecha b'chosher lachlum. So the two Aedim cancel each other out. So he's back to square one. He's not allowed to wear a jacket. Unless the check Peshan is, assuming that there's a Mir HaMotsu, Peshan is there. So again, the second guy I'm not sure, not 100% sure about. The first guy I know for a fact would not be able to wear the other's father's jacket unless he would get it stitched. So now, so that's the question. But the question is that Rabbi Brookheimer is raising. If Rabbi Brookheimer is, again, I don't know the facts of that thought. I'm telling you, if it was a standard kind of a jacket that they were made at the same place and everything is the same, and it's just a discrepancy in terms of the two different shotness checkers. So then our sugya makes sense. Right, even though it's the jacket, but again, no, that's the question. The question is, if those facts are right, that there is no difference between the jackets, the exact same jacket, I'll be halacha, because the fact is telling you that's identical. So if that's true, again, it's only as true as the facts are. If the facts are true, so then you have a contradiction with the way that if the reality is that there are really two totally different jackets or two different stories, that's like I asked one person, tell me this chicken's kosher, that's how the other chicken's right. It's two different chickens, two different chickens. So the lumbas of the shear only make sense, assuming that it's halachic, because they'd be the same job. So then, as we were going through the discussion, so then the first person turns around to me and says, wait a second, I have to be in Shaila. I don't think he meant it seriously. It was just joking. He wanted to hear what I thought about this. He says, now he wants to know, let's say he'll be able to prove that the first shot in his checker was in fact incorrect. We'll go collect other races. You know, we'll end up getting a 2-on-1. So now he's going to prove beyond the shadow of a doubt, halachically, that the first fellow who took apart the shatnez, the disposal shatnez, and cost him money, charged him for taking apart his collar, and he charged him to put in a new, sew in a new collar. He caused him now a big hesed mamum, because he wants to know if he ever right to go claim in Beis Din to get his money back for all the money they had spent on mistaken shatnez checking. Again, assuming that would happen, what's the bid? So I said, well, it's also kashrus slash dinim on mishayla. That's the figure that appears in the end of Masech of Lovakam and the fourth of the Mamakamas. You might tell us, I'm Rav Chana Rav Yechanan. Tavach Uman Shekil Kol Chayim. That, let's say I give an animal to a shaykhay to shech for me, and he makes a mistake. Even though he's a professional, he also makes a mistake. The shaykhay made a mistake, so the shaykhay is chayim to pay me. Afilu Uman Ki Tabachi Tzipayri. Even if he's a world-class Uman, a world-class, expert, the shaykhay, like the butchers in Tzipayri, were known for their expertise, still made a mistake, and he has to pay for it. Yes, the Gemara Mir Rabbi Yochanan Hachi, Rabbi Yochanan really say that. V'amar Rabbi Bachana, Uvda Hava Kamed Rabbi Yochanan, the Kedishta de Ma'on. Once it happened that there was a Shah that came in front of Rabbi Yochanan in the Shul in Ma'on, the Amalei, and he said, Zil Aisi Raya de Mamchas of Tanagon Ve'apur, the Sheikh had chefed some chicken, and he had made a mistake. So Rabbi Yochanan said to him, it just prove that you're a mumta. Just prove that you're a good shaykhet. You're an experienced shaykhet. You're a qualified shaykhet. And as long as you can prove you're a qualified shaykhet, you can't make a mistake and you're not obligated to reimburse the person for the messed up shaykhet. If the guy would be an amateur, you have no right to shech somebody's chicken. The imam told him that that's what he's doing. But if he's looking around telling people that he's a shaykhet, it turns out that he's not a qualified shaykhet. And of course, he's another mamazik. But in this case, he was qualified. So as long as he was qualified to what he was doing, he just made a mistake. Happens to everybody. So then he's going to be potter. So the Gemara says it's a contradiction between the two words of Rabbi Yochanan. The one case of Rabbi Yochanan said the sheikh who goofs up has to pay, and the other one, in the other case, Rabbi Yochanan said if he makes a mistake, he doesn't have to pay. The Gemara says no kasha. It depends whether he's getting paid or not. If he's doing you a favor, he's doing you a favor, and he's shechting you for nothing, so then there's a much less degree of responsibility. That's a shamachinam, and shamachinam doesn't have to pay. If he's getting paid for his job, and he messes up, so then he's considered like a shamachachar, and he's a paid washman, and then he would have to pay. And the Gemara says, Kehadam Rabbi Zeira. Harotish is chayvul tabach yachtim l'dinar. If I ask somebody to shech a chicken for me, so if I want to make sure that he doesn't mess up and end up not getting reimbursed, so I should give him a penny, give him a dinar, give him a small amount of money. So here the guy's trying to be a nice guy, he's trying to shech my chicken for me for free, so I don't want to take a chance on him shechting for free, because then he's going to mess me up. I'll give the guy a kapar, I'll give him a nickel, and say, yeah, here's my token payment, and then he messes up, he's going to pay me $100 for the chicken. So the bottom line is, depends on the person getting paid or not. Will he be held responsible? So if this shatnas checker, I think, is getting paid for his services, since he was getting paid for services, if it really, Glenn Wilson, really turns out that he was in a sense, pashaya, he didn't need to be pashaya, he didn't need to be never here, but he might have did a bad job. So if you're going to tell me that you have 20 other shatnas checkers, they'll all say that the whole thing was lahod from you, the whole thing wasn't shatnas, and that one guy incorrectly took out the shatnas, so of course we have to remember that this department my jack, and he made me pay him to take out the shatnas, then he paid him to buy a put a new thing in, and the whole charged me $50 for the whole job. So that's a tabach and misha kilko, and since he was getting paid for a job, he'd be chayv to pay al tashem misocha. Again, I don't think that the guy was actually suing the shat misocha in the end of the story. He just wanted to hear what I thought in terms of the moment. So here you have a strange and bizarre shayla that touches on mamash. You say this in terms of he touched upon the yisod of following a road. They said that we follow road and efshe levara. Even we were able to find out, we spoke about the issue of the meal, that we have a motzoi, some of the basic ABCs in terms of the dinim of treifas. Then we spoke about the dinim of Eidech and Abisurim. Now, everyone agrees there is such a concept. Rashi says it's just based on a simple svara. Rashi says it's based on sukkim and chazokim and mice, the whole complicated muscle like this. Then we have the issue of when you have spheres in Eidem and Yidim, so the Eidem cancel each other out. How does it relate to the different parties? And then you have the end of the sugya is, how does it square in terms of the momentous? If a person would really be proven to have made a mistake, so is he held responsible for the loss of value that he caused of the item? So depending on whether the Shabbat 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 Shabbat. Again, a very real shot, Mamash the Shabbat really happened. It opens up worlds in terms of basics and the Mamash and Surah, some of the ABCs of things that play out for us, Allah and Mike, in so many, so many different areas of Allah. Okay.
All right.
Okay.